It's time to chat. I want my niños and niñas. Let's get some of those señores and señoritas and the luchadores and luchadores to check it out. Right now, on the Trending Topics Network, I'm going to bring to you Lou Chat. Lou Chat is the podcast that chats all about the happenings within Lucha Underground. And guess what? I'm the host, Finn Fish, and this is the 59th installment of Lou Chat. And on this week's show, oh man, we're going to cover the current episode of Lucha Underground, episode 7 of season 3, titled Payback Time. We have our big time interview with a big member of the Lucha Underground roster, known as Cortez Castro, Ricky Reyes, known as Detective Reyes. We have some lucha news, and we got a lot more to chat about with you. But first, what's going on? How's everything going? Ah, yeah, that presidential debate, it sucks for me because I live in Las Vegas. And yeah, it wasn't too bad because I didn't go anywhere today. But it'd been nice to head out to that Trump Tower that we have out in Las Vegas. I heard they built like a taco truck wall where they just light up a bunch of taco trucks in the parking lot or near the parking lot of the Trump Towers. That'd be pretty cool to get out there and get chomp on some tacos. But the Trump Tower is a nice place to stay. I got to stay there one night. It was nice. Oh man, all the amenities. But I'm not gonna too much of that because the best thing is you get to check out at 3 p.m. So after a night of drinking on the Vegas Strip, you don't want to check out at 11 or noon. You want to check out later so you can sleep some of that shit off. But it was all good. I had a great time, but I had also a very good time with this episode of Lucha Underground. And we got some big time news. We got some big news going on with a show that's going to be happening pretty soon. So listen for that. But first, let's get into a little bit of that Lucha news. So here's some great news. Lucha Underground is starting to tour a little bit. They got 3 official dates that they're going to hold Lucha Underground shows. And these are all free to attend. Go to the Lucha Underground website and, you know, find out more information. But they got a show in Phoenix, Arizona. We got some listeners that are in that area. Hopefully you can make it to this. You know, it's going to be October 23rd at the Phoenix State Fair. So that's going to be cool. They have a show October 30th in Houston, Texas, at the Traders Village in Houston. They have a show November 5th in Escondido, California, at the Escondido Tamale Festival. So, man, I think I could probably make it to the San Diego show, but yeah, I mean, if they come to Las Vegas, it's going to be rap. It's going to be game over. We're going to be there, like, the first person there. But this is pretty cool, you know, testing the water, see what it's like. But I want some feedback on these shows because I wonder if they're going to continue with the storyline. Everyone that has a title in the current storyline that has not been seen yet gets all their titles back. And how they're going to play it off, or just going to have random matches. I don't want to go to these these shows and get spoiled any. But it'd be cool just to see some of these guys again live and some of the new characters. But that's a good thing for them. They're moving up and moving out. So I'm really liking the progress of Lucha Underground. And that's going to be it of the Lucha news. We got a long show and there wasn't that much news to really get into. I do have some Paragon news, but I like to keep this all Lucha until the end of the show. But let me just say a few more things about Lucha Underground. Hopefully you guys follow them on Facebook and on Twitter because they're awesome. They show not clips, they just show what's going to happen on the next episode of Lucha Underground. So like on Monday and Tuesday, they announce that Prince Puma would be taking on Mil Muertes. This is good. It's a little bit more advertising that they can do, especially when everything's already filmed. They did not announce who Matanza's opponent would be, but they did announce that there was going to be a Dario De La Doom, so that helps. And they didn't announce every match, and they don't talk about nothing that's behind the scenes, of those little cutaway scenes. So, you know, they're not spoiling nothing for anyone, so go ahead and add them to your Twitter and your Facebook account. And speaking of Twitter, that's where you can find me. I am at finfishscu, and I have a Gmail account, so you can send me emails there, and it is finfishscu@gmail.com. And back again, as the most popular way to reach the show, it is 702-803-2428, 702-803-CHAT, where you could chat with me about Lucha Underground, Lucha. We could talk about anything. You're coming out to Vegas, you want to catch a show, hit me up there. Hit me up anywhere. I'll respond to you. But hit me up there. We could plan something out. We can hit the town. Because this coming weekend, I'm going to go to the Freak Show Wrestling event. And it's going to be Cody Rhodes versus the Freak Show champion, Funny Bone. And this is pretty cool because Cody Rhodes is anywhere and everywhere. I just watched him on Arrow. He's been on TNA. He's making his rounds. A lot of these shows that I get to watch on Fight, they're advertising Cody Rhodes. WXW Shotgun, I believe, we're advertising Cody Rhodes for later next year. ROH was advertising Cody Rhodes. So this man is a popular guy. And so that's cool. Now let's recap episode 7 of season 3 of Lucha Underground, titled Payback Time. We start the show off with Prince Puma in the locker room, taping himself up for his match against Miro Mortez later on today. As we get Vampiro stepping in, like, hey man, if you need anything, Prince Puma cuts him off, like, I don't need nothing from you. If I'm getting my ass beat right in front of your desk, don't do nothing, don't help at all. I'd rather die by Miro Mortez's hands than be led by your hands. Vampiro says, okay, cool man, but I have a prediction for the match, and it is Miro Mortez dies by your hand. And now we open the show as Vampiro and Matt Striker welcome us to the temple, and we see Dario Cueto in the ring with Matanza, so we know what time it is. It is time for the Dario Dial of Doom, and we spin the dial, and it is none other than Killshot. Dario Cueto says, yeah, he might have been through war, but can he do it again against my brother? And that match is next, and so for our first Lucha of the night, it is for the Lucha Underground World title as Matanza Cueto defends his title against Killshot. And is this match just pretty much an ass whooping? I want to say it, not an ass whooping per se, but Killshot still wearing those wounds of war from his weapons of mass destruction match versus Marty the Moth. But Killshot gets some sick offensive, but Matanza Cueto is just too strong. I like the fact that we see Killshot even switching up some of his offense, going after just even a simple wrist lock that stuns Matanza, as Killshot gets a lot of quick, fast paced offense in. Now let's go into this killer sequence. This is sick. We had Killshot climbing to the top rope, and then Matanza just cutting that distance off, knocking Killshot off the top ropes, but now he's just cradling the top rope. Matanza climbs up the ropes backwards, in a sense, and then picks up Killshot for a tombstone off of the middle rope. But lucky for Killshot, he flips out of that, turns around, and kicks Matanza Cueto in the knee. So now Matanza Cueto is just hanging onto the ropes, inside the ropes, but he's in the middle ropes. Trust me, watch this. Because then Killshot hits this super kick and the crowd just goes wild. But Matanza is still caught up in the ropes. And then Killshot hits this TDT out of the corner, like a draping DDT that Randy Orton does. But he's caught. And then Killshot's just fighting his way up. Oh man, you can feel this guy's pain. He climbs up to the top rope. And then this is a good part because the crowd even cheers even louder. He rips off the bandages he has on his back. He goes for that double stop. Matanza rolls out of the way. Killshot rolls through this double stop, and then Matanza hits him with this lariat that flips this dude inside out. And I'm liking the new touches to Killshot's mask. Same mask, same color, but now that he has longer hair, it's cut off in the back, so his hair is like flowing out of the back, you know, it's in little braids. So that's pretty cool. And I've been watching other wrestling. and I see him catch up, I'm like, dude, this hair, dude's hair is long. That must be sucking to be in that mask when your hair is braided. But unfortunately, this week they cut it all out. So I like that aspect of it. And that was going to roll us right into the finish. Because then after that, Matanza Cuarto picks up Killshot, tosses him into the ropes. And bam, Wrath of the Gods, 1, 2, 3. And your winner and still Lucha Underground World Champion, Matanza Cuarto. We see Killshot just writhing and rolling in the ring as the crowd still cheered for him as Matanza and Dario leave the ring. And then out of nowhere, we see this guy coming up to Killshot. You know, he goes, Killshot, you know, looks at him and goes, hey, Dante, you're alive. He hugs him and all that. And Dante goes, not today. And Dante puts a beating on Killshot. I guess this is the guy that Killshot left for dead. And Dante takes off his dog tags, puts him on Killshot, and shoots Killshot. And Dante, I guess, is going to be Dante Fox, who is AR Fox. And another guy, a good guy from the NEC. And I mean, if you haven't seen him, he doesn't get to do much, but the moves he does do is pretty sick. He does his, like, just drop kicks. It's pretty nice. But this is good. You introduce this guy. We did a little bit of backstory, and now that he's here, we have not a full backstory about what Dante Fox is happening, but we have an understanding. We know that Killshot knows him, they know each other, and seeing the backstage stuff with Killshot, that this guy left him for dead, now he wants to leave Killshot for dead. So, there you go. I mean, you can read more into it, you could read in less into that even, but these guys are two African-American wrestlers in a wrestling promotion that do not have to dance. So that is pretty cool. They have an actual military background, which, you know, not a lot of black people even get unless you're G.I. Bro, right? But anyways, let's keep moving on. Now we have the Trios champions making their way to the ring. Aerostar, Drago, and Phoenix, who I have to say does not have a nice shirt on. It's like win team shirt with some football numbers in the back. I don't understand it because the win team's at the bottom of the shirt. But it's okay. These guys get into the ring. And Dario Cuarto pops out of his office and goes, you know what? Yeah, my brother is beating everyone on the roster. I tried to help with the Dario Dalo Doom, but it's not working out. So what we're going to do here is we're going to have Aztec Warfare, where, you know, since my brother is so dominant, he's going to be the first entrant in Aztec Warfare. So that's good for you, right, Phoenix? Because that means you don't have to enter number one. But you get to enter number 20. Well, not really, because the winner of this match will be the 20th entrant, the last entrant into Aztec Warfare. But, you know, with any opportunity I give out, there has to be a consequence, and the two losers don't even get to make it to Aztec Warfare. So, ring the bell, and in our second Lucha of the Night, it is the Trios Champions in a triple threat match to determine the last entrant, the 20th entrant, into Aztec Warfare. So, let's go into it, and we're going to start off with Aerostar, who comes to the ring. He doesn't have glowing lights, but actually they gave him the fire. That Aerostar he can that he carries down in AAA. He got it. He has it. That is pretty fucking awesome in my regards. Let's move into, let's say, Drago right here. Drago is just existing at this time. Nothing changed from the other week, so nothing too much to gain. But let's go to Phoenix. Phoenix has a new shirt. Phoenix is speaking a little bit of English. And Phoenix is the man to beat, they say, in this match, because he's been to a lot of wars. And he's been the Lucha Underground World Champion. I'll give it 1 week, but it is all good in that regard. And they start this match, and it is a great match. Oh, man, I can watch Errol Starr wrestle a broomstick, because this guy can fly and flip and do all these other tricks. And it doesn't have to end in a dropkick or a DDT. He is able to hit arm drags. And one of the moves I do like that he does, it's not very smooth, but it is very cool, is that tilt the world into the lung blower. Oh, man, that is sick. You could be like around the world, blow them lungs or something like that. But the puff, 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 I don't know what the hell you got to call it, but it is a pretty sick move. As these trios champions are just going at it, and the commentators are like, man, they're trios champions, but they all have to go after this to be, you know, the Lucha Underground world champion. And would these guys get along after this? And Vampiro says, yeah, but, you know, this is a bigger prize, this is a bigger reward. So, you know, you have to go in there all out. You can't be slacking on any of your opponents. And as we see it with these guys, they did, and that's mad. Phoenix gets his head just knocked the hell off. He gets a broken nose. And I like Matt Stryker and Vampiro. Because it's like, hey, how does that affect the luchador when he gets hit in the nose with him wearing a mask? And it's lucky for Phoenix. Phoenix has an open mouth mask at the bottom, so it's a little easier for him to breathe. Where if he had a broken nose, he couldn't really be hindered in his breathing if he had a mask that's covering his mouth. Because I believe blood would get into that part. He didn't say this, but the blood would get into the part that covers your mouth, and you actually just breathing in the blood, so it would hinder your breathing. So he didn't get all, like I said, all that detail, but I just think about it, and that would make a little bit of sense. But this is a spectacular match. This is a lucha style match, and in regards to people like, oh, why is one of the guys standing outside when there's two in the ring? Because in Lucha Libre, the guy rests. He knows his opponent's not going to get pinned that quickly. And you have 3 seconds once you see a pin to run in there to attack. So there's no reason to attack or to pretend to be laid out. You just sit there waiting for your turn. But you're waiting for that opportunity to sneak up on the next person. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But check out this match. It's great. Super kicks, dumps, dives. Everything you see in Lucha Libre is here, and we're just going to the finish where Phoenix is just right out on the floor. Errol Starr tries to do something cool, but we just have Drago rolling him up. 1, 2, 3, and your winner of this match is Drago, and that is what is Lucha Libre again. And Lucha Libre, the win comes from wherever it comes from. So just like that, a simple roll-up wins the match, especially when you have the opportunity of one guy being knocked out and the other guy just getting caught off guard. Now we go to the backstage where we have Drago looking in the mirror. He's always in that bathroom in that mirror. As we have Cobra Moon, our Lady Cobra Moon, walks up on him. Hey, I like the scales, but, you know, maybe when you win that Lucha Underground World title, you could bring it back to our tribe. Drago says, I'm never returning to that tribe, as he walks out. Some big dude, don't know who he is, is in the bathroom. He goes, I thought this was a men's bathroom, as he barbs and stuff like that, and Cobra Moon looking also sexy. It just looks at him in disgust as we go to the next vignette. Now we got Daryl Cuarto sitting in his office as Johnny Mundo walks in. Daryl has this look on his face like, oh my gosh. But Johnny Mundo's like, give me a world title shot. Daryl Cuarto's like, you don't get one yet. You don't deserve one yet. Johnny Mundo's like, okay, I got you. I've been saving this for a rainy day. You know, it rarely ever rains in California, but I guess it's raining right now because remember when we didn't like each other? Here is this. And he puts the briefcase that he took from Daryl Cuarto in season 1. Look at that. Continuity, people. And he goes, here's the money back. And Daryl goes like, what? Wow, okay, so next week you're going to get a shot against Sexy Star for her Gift of the Gods title. Daryl Cuarto's happy. Johnny Mundo's happy. Daryl Cuarto goes, wow, my $100,000 is here. Johnny Mundo goes, not really. I had to spend a little. And Daryl Cuarto says something about getting rid of some type of sex tape. Johnny Mundo's like, whatever. And he leaves. So I have a match signed up for next week or in the coming weeks, on Lucha Underground, where we're going to have Johnny Mundo taking on Sexy Star for a Gift of the Gods title. But this is continuity, people. This happened in Season 1. The first few weeks of Season 1 were Dario Cuarto had put up the briefcase of money for the winner of this match before they even had a Lucha Underground World Champion. We see Johnny Mundo and Prince Puma. I forget who won the match, but we had Big Rick coming down and beating the hell out of both of them and taking the money. And then eventually Johnny Mundo had taken the money from there. So that is pretty fucking awesome, I have to say. Now it's time for our third and final Lucha of the Night, as we have the first ever Lucha Underground World Champion, Prince Puma, taking on the man who took that title from him and his mentor, Mil Muertes, with Katrina. And Katrina's always looking good, but okay, this match is just all out war, and these guys fight everywhere like usual. But when you fight everywhere in Lucha Underground, you fight in the crowd, and they're up in the rafters, the bleachers, I should say. And Mil Muertes just parts the sea as he beats the hell out of Prince Puma. We have Mil Muertes getting kicked down to the ground now, or out of the bleachers, and we have Prince Puma leaping out of these seats right on top of Mil Muertes as the crowd is just standing on their feet because they got to get out of their seats. But they're standing on their feet cheering for this great feat of athleticism. Now we're going to roll into the finish as we have Mil Muertes picking up Prince Puma and tossing him into the corner. Prince Puma is fighting out of the corner. He gets to drop Mil Muertes with some well-placed kicks. Mil Muertes is lined up for that patented 630. Puma hops up carefully. He lines himself up. And some flips, and bam, hits the 630, spins around, runs for Mil Muertes for the pin. 1, 2, 3, and you're a winner of the last and final Lucha of the Night, Prince of Puma. And that's pretty much it. Mil Muertes rolls out of the ring. Prince Puma is in there partying and celebrating. But that's not the end of the show, because now we are backstage with Rey Mysterio Jr. as he's speaking to someone. He's telling him, man, I got bigger plans in Lucha Underground, and I don't want Chavo here. I don't want to do this to Chavo, but I'm going to have to do it. So I'm asking your permission. Will I be cool with the Guerrero family if this, what I have to do, happens to Chavo? And pops out of the shadows is none other than Chavo Classic, Chavo Guerrero Sr. He says the lineage of his family. And he's asking Rey, is this the only way to handle this? And Rey says, yes, if I want to complete my mission within Lucha Underground. And we go off the air. And just in case you missed any of that, here's the recap of the recap. Matanza Cuarto retaining his Lucha Underground World title versus Killshot. We had the Trios Champions in a three-way match where Drago had won the opportunity to be the last person in the Aztec Warfare. And we had Prince Puma defeating Mil Muertes in the main event. And we got a long show because it's still the interview. So right now we're going to thank some people. We want to thank Mr. Fourth Row for me and him are going to be doing a podcast. That podcast, once again, is What's on Fight, as we are going to watch the Fight app. And our first show is going to be Paragon Pro Wrestling. And the news about Paragon Pro Wrestling is that they're not filming anything until the beginning of the year. That's what they said on their Facebook. So as they let me know, I will let you know. Because I like promoting the shows that happen in Las Vegas. And that's pretty cool. I want to thank none other than the Twisted Savage, who had just ordered himself a Luchat t-shirt. So that's pretty awesome, right? So get on board with him. There's still time. So let's get some orders in. And I want to thank the lovely Anna New Orleans. But right now, let's get into my interview with Ricky Reyes, Cortez Castro, Detective Reyes from Lucha Underground.
Now, our next guest on Luchat is none other than Ricky Reyes, known to us luchadores and luchadores of Lucha Underground as Cortez Castro or Detective Reyes. Cortez Castro, Ricky Reyes, how are things going with you?
Things are going great, really good.
Just going to start off with, you know, the basic questions. How did you get started in wrestling?
You know, I just watched it as a kid and fell in love with it. And I think I was around 6 years old when I decided that's what I wanted to do. So I just pursued it, and it just kind of kept growing from there, you know. Like, just went to high school and went out for the wrestling team, knowing once I graduated that I wanted to pursue being a professional wrestler. So my parents were cool with whatever I chose to do, as long as I was either working or going to school while I was pursuing whatever I wanted. So I just kind of kept with it, and I just knew that's what I wanted to do.
When you were growing up watching wrestling, who were some of your, you know, favorite wrestlers, influential wrestlers?
I mean, at first, you know, when you're a little kid, it's, you know, like Hulk Hogan and, you know, the colorful characters that you see. But as I got into, like, junior high, into high school, I got more involved in watching, like, Steiner Brothers in Japan and, you know, Bob Backlund and Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, guys that can, like, wrestle. So kind of fell in love with more the athletic type of wrestling. Started tape trading and stuff, like getting tapes from like Japan and stuff, and just really started following like Dynamite Kid and Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko, guys like that. So I just really got into that style of wrestling. I guess the wrestling that is what we see now on television, really.
Yeah, and it shows in the way you move in the ring. Your style is a lot. It is very intense. Then, which I like. What part of the country did you grow up in, or where are you from?
I was born and raised in Southern California, in actually Fontana, California, is where I was born and raised, and I lived there until I was about 25, and then I moved to the East Coast in Pennsylvania about 10 years ago. So I was born and raised in Southern California, but like traveled all up and down the West Coast and stuff when I first started wrestling, and then went to Japan, and then I went to Mexico, and then back to Japan a few more times, and you know, just kind of all over the place after that.
What was like the first wrestling show that you could remember attending?
As a fan, or
as a fan.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have much money as when we were small, so like couldn't go to the bigger events like WrestleMania and Anaheim or anything like that. So we could only go to like the small house shows that they would have in San Bernardino at the Pavilion. My dad would take me and my brother. He only took us twice. First one was like, I think the main event was Bret and Mr. Perfect were headlining all the house shows. And on the same card was like Undertaker and Ravishing Rick Rude and Million Dollar Man and stuff like that. So they were at a time where they were running pretty small venues because the Pavilion is not very big, maybe holds maybe couple thousand, I think, maybe. I don't even know if it's that many. It was a long time ago, but it was you know, when the crowds were a little bit smaller for WWF at the time.
Who was your first match ever against as a professional wrestler?
I want to say his name was Phenomenal Phil. And it was in Lancaster, California, like up in the desert area, like Hesperia, Apple Valley, Victor Valley area. And the place I broke in at was Jesse Hernandez's School of Hard Knocks and EWF Wrestling. And they used to run like a TV taping type thing every month, I think, up there. And I remember, like, putting the ring up and stuff like that. And I was just in the back in the locker room just doing whatever. And the promoter came up to me and he was like, hey, he goes, we need a guy to work Phil tonight. So we're going to put you in there in your first match. And I was like, oh, all right. So he's like, you got your gear? And I'm like, yeah, it's in my car. So I ran out, grabbed my bag. And from what I was told, it wasn't a bad match for being my first match. I mean, like, I did a lot of amateur wrestling training and amateur wrestling. So, like, I kind of got the basics down really quickly. And just being, like, beaten up and thrown around in amateur wrestling for a few years prior to pro wrestling. So I was kind of like used to the physicality of wrestling. So supposedly, I mean, I remember a lot of people saying it, you know, it was good. It wasn't, you know, like they couldn't tell it was my first match. And then after that, I just kind of started getting booked regularly and stuff like that. So.
That's amazing. Now, I've seen, looking up a little bit more stuff about you, that you spent some time in ROH. How was that? Your time in ROH?
Yeah, you know, at first it was really good. It kind of went through some changes while I was there, and I went there for a couple of years consistently, and then took some time off and went to Puerto Rico for a year, kind of came back under, like, it was under new management and stuff like that. And it was really like a different product and, you know, kind of different people in charge. So it kind of made it difficult for some of us. But I mean, at first couple of years, first year, year and a half was really good. A lot of fun with Joe and Punk and Alex Shelley and Brian and, you know, Homicide, Loki, all of us, and so it was a pretty cool era. Like, I think it's 2004, 2005. A lot of people think that was like the best years of Ring of Honor, just because of the quality of talent we had in the locker room, which was like out of this world, you know. Like, so I mean, it was a lot of fun. And then, you know, just things change, people change, you know, management changes and stuff. So it makes it a little difficult to adjust sometimes, you know, so it was all right.
And then, speaking of, you speak of low key, that's what your style reminds me of, except for you're more technical, I want to say, but you have that, mm-hmm. you both have that intense look on your face when you do wrestle,
mm-hmm.
Which is, cool. And, how did you get yourself into Lucha Underground?
Well, at the time, Lucha Underground was being talked about, like, happening. It didn't even have a name yet. I got a call from somebody at a AAA and had given me like an inside tip that somebody was going to be calling me about basically what was being at the time, sold to me as AAA USA. It was supposed to be like, that was just the generic idea of it. It was basically going to be, I was told it was going to be like very movie-like setup, and it was going to be based with, you know, like the core group of guys were going to be AAA guys, and then they were going to use, wrestlers out of the U.S. as well. So they were going to try to mix in different talent with the Lucha guys. So. At the time, WWE was looking to just start up the network, and I was told by talent relations in WWE that I had a job waiting for me as soon as the network started. They just didn't know a start date for the network, so they couldn't hire me. So at the time, I got this call, and I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to pass up an opportunity to be on television and work with AAA. Like, I trained Lucha originally, even though I wrestled a lot in Japan, but I liked the style, and I thought if it's being billed as Lucha Libre for an American audience, like, that's right up my alley, because, like, I can wrestle both styles, and I'm really good at kind of meshing them together and making everything make sense. So I thought that was like a perfect challenge for me. So I was really excited over it. So I had called WWE back and asked them one more time. I said, you know, look, I have an opportunity right now. I can't really pass it up. Like, are you guys looking to hire me soon and then wait it out until the network starts? Or is this something that you want to do after the network starts, you know? And they said that at the time they just didn't have the room on the roster to hire more talent. At the time, NXT was really nothing. You know, it just switched over from FCW to NXT, so they were still trying to build that, and it was still kind of like a cluster of, like, mismatched type of guys, like, you know, some ex-football players, you know, just trying it out. And so it was really – it wasn't what it is today, like a whole nother division of the WWE. So at the time, I just – it was a no-brainer, really. I just wanted to make sure that they weren't, you know, looking at giving me something sooner than later. So I jumped all over Lucha Underground as soon as it came. Like, I got a call Friday night about that somebody from Lucha Underground was going to be calling me Monday morning, and they did. They called me Monday morning. They emailed me the contract Tuesday. I signed it Tuesday night and faxed it over Wednesday morning, and I was technically the first wrestler to sign with Lucha Underground. So like, the running joke in the back is like, I'm number one, like my employee number is 001. So that was kind of cool. Like, I looked at it like it was like a great opportunity for me, but an even better opportunity for Lucha Underground. And I still do, because like, I bring a lot to the company, like as far as like creativity and like character and style and everything else. Like, I can wrestle anybody, and there isn't a guy in the back that, or girls that don't want to go out and wrestle me, because like, I consider myself to be the best all around wrestler in the company. So like, when the opportunity came, I jumped all over it. Like, I was excited. So, I mean, it was kind of a no brainer for me. I know a lot of other guys kind of waited it out and wasn't too sure about anything, but I just looked at it like, worst case scenario, you know, I just make the best out of it for the time that it's there, you know, and the time that existed. And now it's turned into this, you know, what people consider the best wrestling show on television today, you know.
Yeah. And when they initially sold Lucha Underground or AAA America to you, was it exactly what they promised you that it was going to be, or little things change? Or
no, I mean, it was, you know, I had a short talk with one of the producers, and they called me, you know, and he said, well, basically, it's just, you know, it's geared for Latin American audience in America. Like, it's, you know, like Mexican Americans, and you know, they want to gear it towards the Hispanic audience, but the English speaking, you know, like, so it was, nothing was going to be in Spanish, you know. I didn't need to know Spanish. That wasn't like, you know, they just wanted fast paced good wrestling. Like, that was the first thing that they had told me about it, was like, they want good quality matches. And then they said that they would take care of the rest as far as, you know, the theatrics and this and that. So yeah, I mean, technically it's exactly what they explained it to me to be. And then Christopher DeJoseph, who's like the head writer, he had reached out to me and asked me to give him a call. So I did. And he said, well, right now you're the first wrestler to sign with us, and we're really excited to have you on board. And I was really excited to be a part of it, you know. He had two other writers with him, and all three of them knew of me and had seen me at some ROH events in Connecticut years ago. So I was pretty excited to know that the writers kind of had an idea of what Ricky Reyes was. So they had originally asked, you know, Chris had called me, because originally I was supposed to be like, maybe like Son of Havoc, I think. And he called to say that he liked the idea of me going without a mask because of my facials. He thought that that would come off better on television and had some ideas for me without a mask. So he thought he wanted to ask me what I thought of it, and I said, absolutely. I said, I feel that's one of my strong points, and, you know, I can get points across with just facials and mannerisms and stuff like that. And I said, if you, and I'm not a flyer, like I don't dive and go off the top rope with crazy moves. And I said, I think a lot of the perception with mass wrestlers is that they do a lot more aerial type of maneuvers. So, and he was like, okay, well, that's cool. So he kind of asked me, he said, well, we want Ricky Reyes, but we're going to repackage him as something else, and but we want you in a different look. So I kind of pitched the idea with the cargo pants into the kick pads and the gloves, and he was like, yeah, I like it. That's almost exactly what we were looking for, was something a little more street, you know, mentality. And I said, yeah, I've always wanted to change up my look to this, but I never really had a purpose or a reason to do it, you know, so I hadn't changed up my gear in years. And he was like, okay, let's do that. So when I came to Lucha Underground, I brought the gear that I wanted, and they were really open with like, yeah, you know, be you, you know, do what you want to do in this gear. And I was like, all right, cool. So it was really cool how they gave all of us like a lot of like leeway on what we do and how we do it. Like if we don't like something, like, doors always open. You just talk to the writers and say, well, I don't like this, you know, and I have this idea, you know, and they may not take your exact idea, but they'll go in that direction, and they make sure everybody's happy, you know, and everyone there is very valuable and important to the show. You know, there's not just one guy who's just the main event all the time, you know, like our show, you know, there's main characters. Yeah. But like, at some point, everyone main events the show, you know, and everyone gets their big moment. And that was one of DJ's, you know, things that he wanted. He wanted to highlight all the talent equally. You know, we have characters that, you know, people might see more often than others and that stuff like that. But no one's of lesser value than the next guy, you know, or girl.
Which is a great company to work for in that regard. Yeah, that must be spectacular. How did you feel when they gave you the script to play a cop? You're under detective.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome because it was something. First off, it was something nobody would ever believe, you know, and it was that shock value, and you know it's good when it pops the boys in the back, you know, like, because we all kind of are into our own characters and storylines because they're very detailed, you know, so like we're very busy with that. So a lot of times I don't know what other guys are doing or, you know what I mean? And we just kind of in passing kind of talk about, well, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. So I didn't tell anybody after season one when I got the call. We were going back to work for season two. DJ called me and he said, I got this idea. And I said, all right. And he said, well, they wanted a cop persona, like a detective character. And I started laughing and I said, okay. And they're like, so you're going to be Detective Reyes. And I was like, awesome, or Officer Reyes or whatever. And I was like, that's so awesome, because all the bad things I did in season one, no one would suspect the whole time I'm undercover. You know what I mean? So it was just, and I looked at it as a huge challenge because, I was going to be doing a complete 180 turn, you know, they wanted me to be from a vicious, you know, a bloodthirsty type of like killer to, all of a sudden, I was, you know, a straight edge, you know, police officer, you know what I mean? And it was like a huge change. Like character wise, I went from saying one or two words per scene to having my own, you know, dialogue. I had to like remember and different mannerisms. I went from being like perceived as a street thug, you know, out to just beat the hell out of people for money, and I enjoyed it, to trying to lock up people and put them in jail for breaking the law. You know what I mean? It was like, it was crazy, you know? I mean, the guys in the back were like, didn't even believe it. It was me. Like, we watched, like, the first few episodes of the second season. Like, we had, like, a viewing party while we were still taping it. And when my scene came up, everyone turned around to look at me like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, you know, and I was just like, yep, you know.
Did you study anything? Did you watch any movies, you know, to get this persona down, or just you went at natural?
No, I wanted to do it naturally. I mean, as far as, like, the setting and stuff like that, that's all done by Skip. Like, he's the director, you know what I mean? Like, he works his magic and makes it what he wants it to be. What I was told as far as, like, Officer Reyes, I was basically told to, you know, like DJ was like, you know how you are when you go home, like, you're a father, you're a husband, you know what I mean? Like, you're a protector, you know, like, he goes, bring that out. Bring out just the Reyes that, you know, that when you're leaving home, you know what I mean? Like, that guy, you know what I mean? Like, when you're just, you know, you get up, you go to work, you know what I mean? You do your job for your family, and then you come home. He goes, we just want that, because this character is going to be, you know, not to give too much away, but, like, this character is like, we want everyone to be able to connect with this character that way. And I said, okay, you know, so, like, you know, when you get your script and stuff, you know, and you go into rehearsal and you're doing the lines, you know, they'll run it a few times, and then Skip will sit there with you and he'll tell you, look, do it this way, think of it this way. And you'll be saying the same words for the most part, but in a completely different, like, tone, and, you know, delivering them completely different, you know. And it's because he's an awesome director. So it turns into something so much more, you know, better than you originally thought it would be. Cause you get your script and you start reading it and you're like, okay, let me just, you know, memorize these things. And then you get there and you're saying them completely different from what you initially thought. You know what I mean? So, you know, a lot of us just go in like, okay, you know, with Skip, we're just kind of there, and he's just going to mold you into whatever he wants you to be that day, you know, and you just go with it. So a lot of times, you know, by the time you see the finished product, I mean, it's been done, you know, 20 times, you know, and all different. So it's the best cut that Skip thinks that, you know, that you produce. So it's really unique. The acting part of it is so important, you know.
Yeah. And just within the body of Lucha Underground, what was your, like, favorite match?
Man, that's a tough one. I'm going to have to say it hasn't aired yet. So just know that that season 3 only gets better as it goes on.
I'm looking intrigued to that one, definitely. And was it, whose idea was it to bring, like, Joey Ryan in as your partner? I think that was probably the funniest thing when he was your partner.
Well, I mean, obviously it was like DJ and Chris Roach and Matt Stroman, like, those are the writers, and, like, I just think it's the most perfect, you know, pairing. It really is. And it only gets better because, like, throughout season 2, we're really just barely getting started. Like, you know, I know a lot of people on social media were just saying, well, you know, like, the whole detective thing, it didn't go anywhere. But there's a reason for that, you know. But with Joey, we have a long history. Like, we really started together, like, in Southern California, early 2000s, you know. By the time, I mean, I started in 98, 99. I didn't really start catching fire until, you know, early 2000s, my, you know, first trip to Japan and Mexico and stuff like that. And then, you know, so we kind of like, we parted ways for years, and, you know, he went in one direction and I kind of went in another, but, we've been good friends for years, for well over a decade. And it's just funny because, like, he's kind of like this, like, we're kind of opposites, but we're like the same. So it's, I don't know, like, we share a lot of common things, and then we're kind of different in a lot of different ways. So it's a lot of fun, but at the end of the day, like, we just love what we do so much that anything that we're asked of, we just do, you know. And before season three is over, we'll both express that to a great deal. So it's pretty cool.
Oh man, I can't wait for that. That's one of my I thought it was one of the best storylines in a long time, because usually cops just come out and arrest the wrestler and they take him to jail. This is where there's actually a undercover cop posing as a wrestler to take this business wherever it's going to go. So I thought it was awesome, that storyline that people don't know how to pull off properly.
Yeah.
But the latest thing that's happened to you is your arm has been broken by Pentagon. but is he good in the ring, or how is he? I mean, people are a big fan of his. I mean,
Pentagon's good at doing what Pentagon does, you know. And that's another thing about me is, like, when I say I'm the best all-around wrestler, it's because I can adapt and evolve, and, you know, I can mesh well with any style. So there's guys that are good at just being themselves, you know. But a lot of times, like, you know, that's good, and it's really good in a lot of different ways. But, like, for me, it's more important to be able to wrestle all styles, you know, like, without blinking an eye. For me, I can wrestle anybody, any style, anywhere, at any time. Pentagon's good at being Pentagon. You know, if he had to be something else or do something else, he might not be as comfortable, and that shows in the ring. Now, I'm not saying he's bad. He's awesome, and he's in the perfect position, and he gets to write his own ticket, you know, because people want Pentagon. So, like, that's what they get, you know what I mean? So, becoming a great all-around wrestler, you know, and wrestling all different styles, you have to get out of your comfort zone and make that not uncomfortable, you know. Yeah. And for me, I've been there so many times and so many different levels, like, you know, wrestling a Japanese guy that doesn't speak English, you know, and, you know, having to go 25 minutes because it's the number one contender title, you know, match. And I've done that in Japan, you know what I mean, getting thrown in semi-main events and CMLL, you know, against Mexican wrestler, you know, luchadors that only know classic lucha libre style, and I don't speak Spanish, so it's not like I can communicate with them. So, you know what I mean, I've done that, you know. I've wrestled any style anywhere and in the world, and I mean, he's good, he's real good. And he's good at being Pentagon, you know what I mean? And some of the lucha guys, sometimes they don't like stepping too far out of their comfort zone. So unfortunately, you see their match, you know what I mean? Like, they're good at doing their match, and sometimes they only wrestle each other because that's how they can get that type of match off, you know. But to be truly great, it's kind of like Bret Hart. Like, if you look at Bret Hart's King of the Ring night, right? He wrestled three different wrestlers and had three amazing matches in one night with three different styles of wrestling. You know what I mean? People don't really look at that. You know, you look at Stone Cold, who can, like, brawl and beat up Vince McMahon, but then he can wrestle Bret Hart, you know what I mean? Or he can keep up with Shawn Michaels, you know what I mean? Or there's different, or he can wrestle Undertaker and have these awesome matches. Like, people need to understand, like, just doing it one way, and you can only do it one way, backs you into a corner, because what if something happens and that's not the case? You know, you can't come back and be like, oh, I didn't have a good match because it's his fault. It's like, no, it's your job to go out there and have a great match every night, whether it's a broomstick or whether it's Shawn Michaels standing across the ring. You know what I mean? But, I think he's awesome. I think he works so hard, and, he's amazing at what he does, you know what I mean? And that's why he's been so successful.
You say you, like, traveled all around the world wrestling. Where is a place you haven't been that you would like to visit or to wrestle there?
I guess China's becoming, like, a thing, right? Like, I think China, and I heard India had some pretty good crowds this past weekend. A couple of buddies of mine were there. I like to wrestle everywhere. Like, I've been to England and Germany and Mexico, Puerto Rico, Japan. I love wrestling in Japan more so than anywhere. I think my style just kind of fits better there. For me, it's all the same. You know, I just love wrestling anywhere. I mean, I just want to go where the biggest crowds are and the best talent is, you know.
Oh, what's the, like, oddest place you ever had to wrestle? Or,
yeah. What's that?
What's the, like, craziest place you had to wrestle? Or event or arena or?
I would say we did a tag match. It was at Super Crazy's hometown in Mexico. And it was called, we were building to what was going to be called Crazy Mania. And I remember we were in a 6-man tag in the main event against Super Crazy, Crazy Boy, and somebody else. I can't remember. But I remember we were in the main event, and Super Crazy's brother apparently was a wrestler, like, years ago, and he had retired. Well, we were beating up Crazy Boy and Super Crazy in the ring, and he jumped the rail, and we got, you know, he came in and started throwing fists. So me, Rocky, and Bobby Quantz, we were in CMLL at the time, and we just started beating the hell out of him. And we opened him up, we busted him open, and he was just gushing blood out all over the place. Well, it was a full scale riot. Like, people were breaking Corona bottles on the floor and, like, throwing the bottles in the ring. I remember Bobby coming to the back and had, like, these burn marks on his back, and people were putting cigarettes out on his back, like, trying to, burn them. And they burned them, like, they weren't trying. But, and we got up on this stage, and we started, like, flipping everybody off and going crazy. And, like bottles just started flying our way, and we were just like, we're getting the hell out of here. We literally ran to the back, grabbed our bags, and ran to the car and just sat in the car until someone came and took us back. But, like, it was insane. And it was funny because it was just setting up for the next big event, which was Crazy Mania. And we came back for Crazy Mania in the main event. We didn't have to do anything. Like, I think Ricky Marvin ended up teaming with Crazy and them, and we didn't have to do anything. Like people were going crazy. Anytime we touched any one of them, they just booed us. And, like, they had so much security this time. It was insane. So, I mean, I would say there or Puerto Rico. Like, I spent a year in Puerto Rico, and that crowd gets really hot, really, really fast. So.
And I see you enjoy. It seems like you even, like, you downright love wrestling. But what would you do if you didn't wrestle?
I don't know. I've never really thought of that. I like fitness. Like, I like being in the gym and training and stuff like that. So, I mean, I guess I would I mean, my wife's like a yoga instructor and a trainer and stuff, so I would do something along those lines, I guess. I've never really thought of what if I didn't have wrestling.
And you speak a lot about the WWE. How do you feel about it now? And, you know, is the opportunity, you know, if something happens within Lucha Underground, would you go there?
I mean, of course. I mean, it's you know, it's always an option, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, we all kind of want to be there at some point, you know, even if it's just to make a few million and then get out. I mean, you can never say never, right? I mean, right now, I'm extremely happy with where I'm at and doing Lucha Underground, and I'm proud to be a part of it. If, for whatever reason, that was no more, I would definitely pursue them first. You know, you always want to go to the top. So, and I have a ton of friends there now, you know, in the past, like, year or two, it seems like all the guys I've ran up and down the roads with an ROH were all kind of like lingering there. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, I would totally, you know, attempt it, you know, if I didn't have Lucha Underground, but, you know, like there's always those people that are interested or say that they're interested, and I know there's still interest there. And, you know, I can't turn away what I have now for just a bunch of maybes, and you know what I mean? And it would be like almost taking a step backwards in your career, you know, like I have a lot to accomplish, I feel, and I can be utilized a lot more in Lucha Underground and going into season 4, like that's what I plan on doing, you know, is excelling and pushing myself, you know, to the next level there. And, you know, I'm not big on like quitting or starting something and not finishing it. So I, you know, definitely as long as Lucha Underground's, you know, around and it's going to be around for a long time, you know, it's a television show. It's not a wrestling company. So it's a little bit different, but they're also venturing off into doing more wrestling type things, you know, and keeping Lucha Underground's name out there. I think they finally realized, the TV people at least, like it's a bigger animal than they originally thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I see that. What is something people don't know about you about?
Like wrestling related or?
Yeah, wrestling related, life related, whatever you could share with us.
Well, wrestling related, I'm afraid of heights and I never go to the top rope. So I don't know if people know that because I'm small. I think people assume I fly. You know what I mean? Like I know when I wrestle guys now that I've never wrestled, I'm traveling a whole lot more into new areas now. And people always tell me, yeah, just hit me with something off the top rope. And I'm like, yeah, I don't do that. You know, like I stick to the mat, you know, and so I'm afraid of heights. So if I go to the top rope, if anything, I go to give a superplex. I don't receive it, and I don't jump off the top rope with anything. Because giving a superplex, I'm still in the ring. I'm not on the outside.
I'm glad to see. Yeah, I'm really glad to see that your fear of heights hasn't, you know, messed up your performance as in wrestling, because you're saying, like, you're a smaller guy. Usually they do a lot more springboards or a lot more flying, but you're a more of a mat-based guy, which works for you, which is good.
Well, in my opinion, like, I think I like wrestling guys that fly because it gives the fans that in a match, but it complements my style more because if a guy can get me with flying moves, like then my ground wrestling attack is more vicious, you know what I mean? Like it just complements well. So like I prefer to wrestle guys my size or a flyer, but I mean I get in the ring with like promoters, I don't know, it's crazy. Like they book me with their heavyweight champions or like, you know, these guys are like I just wrestled a guy last weekend, 300 pounds. Like, you know, like a power lifter, you know, and I'm like, dude, like I'm 170 on a good day, you know, and it's, I guess it's a compliment to my style and my energy in the ring, but at the same time, I'm like, yo, like I'm not a big fan of getting thrown around so much, you know, like, I mean, I have weekends where it's like 3 days in a row, I'm wrestling, you know, these powerhouse guys or tag teams of powerhouses or something, and it takes its toll after a while, you know.
What is your preferred style, as in, like, you want to be a good guy, a bad guy, the mix?
I don't think there's really a mix. I think that that doesn't exist. I think that there's I understand there's a gray area with good guys and bad guys nowadays. Like, I still think that in a match, to tell a good story, that one person has to be more the aggressor and show more emotion and fire than the other guy, which creates the opportunity for what's called like a comeback. So there's meaning for everything. I prefer to be more the villain, I guess, of the match, just because I think I'm, my believability and stuff like that, as far as what I bring to the match. Like, I'm pretty proud of my accomplishments as far as like being a heel and stuff like that. Like, but I can also wrestle like good, so I'm also a good, you know, babyface wrestler, technical wrestler. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter to me. I mean, I tell people all the time, like, whatever you need, I can do it. So,
and with your mat base and all that, what are your what is your favorite move to do, and what's your favorite submission to put on?
I don't really have like favorites of anything. I try to make my whole game well-rounded, equally well-rounded. I love chain wrestling. I love getting on the mat and exchanging holds and pins and stuff like that. But I also big fan of like standing up and just, you know, throwing forearms and kicks and spinning back kicks and, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm a big fan of everything, suplexes and, you know, I'm just a big fan overall of like, you know, putting a whole bunch of stuff in a big bowl and just making something really good, you know? So for me, it's just, my drug is just wrestling in general. It's not, you know, per se like one particular style or move or anything like that. Cause I kind of feel like all my stuff is good. I don't do anything great, but I do everything good, you know, like from holds to suplexes to strikes. And I just feel that, like, to be the best wrestler all the way around, you have to be able to do everything. I'm comfortable everywhere in the ring.
Yeah. It shows in your work in Lucha Underground, where most of the people watch you at. I've seen you do, it's like a dragon sleeper with a,
mm-hmm.
with a, leg cross. I think that's a pretty sick move. I like the way you put that one on. I thought you were going to say that one, but I can understand you just don't pick no favorites and, you know, you're just a well-rounded attack.
Yeah.
So what guy would you, at this time, would you want to wrestle that you haven't wrestled before?
That I haven't wrestled before?
Yeah.
Dolph Ziggler. I would say Dolph Ziggler is probably the one of the very few I haven't wrestled.
And like, do you watch the other product? You say you have a lot of friends in WWE, but do you watch WWE? Are you caught up on it?
I watch everything. Yeah. I have a lot of friends in other companies like ROH and TNA and stuff like that too. I mean, we all kind of watch each other's stuff and, you know, I keep in touch with everyone all over the place. You know, it's more like when you get to a certain point when you guys have all, like, this generation that's on top now, we've all started 10, 15 years ago together, you know, riding in cars and sharing shitty motels and, you know, hoping to get paid, you know, every show, you know, and, you know, that those moments, they never leave, you know, your heart and in your mind, you know, so you always have that connection with, you know, with Kevin Steens and Seth Rollins and, you know, Samoa Joe's. And I mean, that stuff never really leaves you, you know. So I watch everybody just to see, A, how my friends are doing, and it's just good to be knowledgeable of the different products and what everyone's doing, you know. And I mean, I'm kind of a, well, not kind of, like, I'm a total wrestling nerd, so it's like that's all I study all day is, you know, where they're going with this and what they're doing and what I would do and what, how I would do it. And you know what I mean? And, how do I think it looks, you know? And I try to look at everything from all different angles. Like I watch our show and I break that down and what I like and what I don't and WWE and TNA. And you know what I mean? Like I don't watch as much of the other shows, but I pick and choose what I want to watch, and I pay close attention. And you know, I try to enjoy it as a fan and just watch it in general, and then I just try to pick things apart and I just watch wrestling all the time.
I mean, I'm really glad that that's the answer. I mean, that you're being truthful with the answer you give. You get a lot of these guys that say they don't watch that other stuff, or they just focus on what they're doing. And I'm glad that you still are out there, you know, supporting your friends by watching their matches. And I think that's admirable. And I think that's awesome, I think.
Thanks.
So I guess we've got to wrap it up here. Can you tell everyone where we can find you and all this good stuff?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, Ricky Reyes, and on Instagram, Ricky Reyes, and my Twitter is Ricky Reyes 01. That's all I have right now. You know, and like different shows and events, like I'm based out of Pennsylvania right now, so I'm mostly on the Northeast, go down to Atlanta, North Carolina from time to time, and up into Canada and Rhode Island and stuff, but I'm kind of all over the place. And then once we start shooting season 4, I'll be back and forth everywhere else, so just kind of all over the place.
Okay, and I know she's going to kill me if I don't mention her. Anna, the Orleans, who had set this up,
yep.
I just want to thank her. I got to give her a plug. She's the best.
All right.
But,
yeah.
thank you, Ricky, for this interview and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And once again, I am grateful. I'm so happy that you listened to Lou Chat. I am grateful the Trending Topics Network had picked up this show to be on their network. I want to thank again our good friend Anna New Orleans, pretty soon to be my new co-host on a new show called What's on Fight, none other than Mr. Fourth Row, Mr. Twisted Savage, grabbing himself a Lou Chat T-shirt, and Ricky Reyes for the interview. And with all that being said, adios!
Buena, baby, me sabe. Chica, voy a enseñarte cómo empezaremos. Solo ponte un lápiz junto y cierra los ojos. Puedes silbarme, baby, silba, baby. Allí vamos. Estoy apostando, la forma de amar apostando. Te voy a apostar que le más algo más que solo un ego. Sé que soy culpa tu honor, pero si se vive mañana. Si en el infierno pago Rottweiler, solo hay un flow y un wider. Soy una vergüenza, un chapa y empieza, te pone esa pieza, trena pone olla, juega tus labios en torno a mi figura, toma tu tiempo, le doy
segura. Sílvame, baby, silba, baby, hazme saber, chica, voy a enseñarte cómo empezaremos. Solo pon tus labios juntos, cierra los ojos, puedes sílvame, baby, silba, baby, allí vamos. Voy, me sirve de lo que doy, la chica no deja no que por abajo ya llegó, permiso no ha probado eso que bajo control, muéstrame soprano que sabes usarlo, me invitamos tú y yo fuera de control, me dejaste sin aliento, mírame topo, vení tocame tu no, quítene mi pecho, talento con los labios, verdad que fluyo, divertido, ahora puedes darme todo en un silbido, sin problemas como puedes ven conmigo, tú no cuentas, no te das pero te luces. Puedes silbarme, baby, silba, baby, hazme saber, chica, voy a enseñarte cómo empezaré.